I'd like to call to order the Transportation Finance Committee. I do not see Representative Mahoney, so I don't see Representative, I see Representative Pulaski. He's always on time, one of the more responsible members of this body. So we will have to talk to Representative Mahoney about his bill later. But if Representative Pulaski, if you're ready, a warm welcome to the committee, Representative
Pulaski. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 272 is an annual bill that deals with the port authorities. The port authority legislation was created in the 1990s, and since 1996, almost on a regular basis, we have authorized between 5 to 10 million, sometimes a little bit more, for port authority infrastructure improvement. This improvement is nuts and bolts. It probably is something you don't see, but it's essential. In the cities that are able to use the port authority, Winona, Red Wing, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Duluth, you see a variety of improvements, particularly over the Great Recession, where we had an increase in river traffic. You see barges unloaded and loaded. You see a lot of truck traffic taking materials from the barge and putting it onto the barge. These types of improvements have to be ongoing, particularly over the last few years, where the ports were getting much more use. Also, if you see the price of gasoline and diesel go up, it's likely you're going to see the ports used even more to haul large amounts of materials up and down the river. So with that, I do have John Kubo, the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, also here today.
Thank you. And I just also wanted to let the committee know that House File 272 will be laid over for continued discussion. Because it's a bonding bill, we will keep it in our committee. We will then advise, make some recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. So there's no formal motion to move it to the next committee. That's been our policy, to just hear these bills on transportation and then rank them. So with that, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to address the port infrastructure needs in the state. I'm John Kubo, the Chief Financial Officer at the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. Today, I want to tell you a bit about Duluth port infrastructure needs. I also want to let you know that the Port of the Duluth is not alone in needing to upgrade our port infrastructure. My colleagues in St. Paul, Winona, and Red Wing also have projects that need attention. Before I tell you about Duluth's specific needs, I want you to know that ports work together through a Minnesota Ports Association. We have developed a very good working relationship with the Minnesota Department of Transportation that administers the Port Development Assistance Program. The Port Development Program has been in existence for over 20 years. The state legislature has included funding for the program on a regular basis since 1996. Through this program, the ports partner with the state to update our port infrastructure. Minnesota's public ports keep products moving into and out of state via the cheapest form of transportation available, ships and barges. In 2012, our river ports in the Port of Duluth brought in over 10 million tons of freight. The outbound tonnage in 2012 was over 60 million tons. We bring in sand and gravel, fertilizer, cement, and slag. We export taconite, grain, coal, scrap iron, and potash. We also move a significant number of wind turbines through the Port of Duluth from European manufacturers to wind farms in the Dakotas, Canada, and Minnesota. Our ports are a hub of activity. There are jobs at our ports that are vitally important to the state's economy, and there are thousands of jobs across the state that gain a certain competitive advantage by virtue of our ability to move commodities to national and international markets via our waterway systems. Just a brief word about my counterparts on the Mississippi. The St. Paul Port Authority is in need of dock wall improvements. They have a failed dock wall which is literally washing away with every passing season. They have sinkholes on shore that are making portions of the commercial port unusable. The Red Wing, the Port of Red Wing, needs to improve the sheet piling at their commercial bulkhead just south of the city of Red Wing. The Port of Winona also needs commercial dockside improvement. At Duluth, We are preparing to accommodate an expansion port activity by upgrading our facilities at what's known as the Garfield C&D dock. The dock is 28 acres, and currently the dock wall is in such deteriorated condition that we cannot load or unload ships from the dock. This renovation project is estimated to cost $16 million. The port is preparing to complete the project by doing the work in phases. The current phase is $4 million, of which the port is contributing $1,250,000, and we're estimating that we will let that contract at our March board meeting. The money will be spent to install 1,100 feet of new dock wall at seaway depth and to dredge a slip to remove the previous dock wall that collapsed. Upon completing this phase, the dock will have limited usage capabilities. The next phases will resurface the 28 acres, install rail service, and provide for security. The Department of Transportation has indicated a need for $10 million for the State Port Assistance Funding for the next bonding cycle. The Port Development Assistance Program did receive an allocation of $1 million in the 2012 bonding session. We are asking that the legislature and the administration include additional funding for port development assistance in the 2013 bonding bill. I can commit to you that we will put these resources to good use to keep our economy moving. It's a virtual certainty that we will be maintaining existing jobs by keeping our ports up to date, and we will create new jobs as new companies take advantage of our waterway systems, provide low-cost, safe, and energy-efficient movement of products to market. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the Port Development Assistance Program.
Thank you, Mr. Kubo. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Mason.
Maybe just one quick comment. I had heard, I was at a conference recently where they talked about the Panama Canal is going to be, has been remodeled, and that once that opens, that it should have an impact on the Mississippi River as well as the Great Lakes. Is that mean, you know, does that mean any changes to what you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason,
I'm sorry.
We're looking forward to the Panama Canal getting larger. Up in Duluth, we're also hoping that we could get the St. Lawrence Seaway system larger. Bringing product up the Mississippi is always, or down through the Mississippi, is always a good thing for the state. Every time that you have expansion, you always have opportunity.
Thank you.
Any other further questions? Mr. Kuba, is there a Tom Diamond that's come? It was named on the list. Don't see him? Oh. Mr. Diamond, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Tom Diamond. Thank you, Chair, committee members. I would like it to strongly encourage you not to fund this program, not the way it's directed. I would encourage you to actually look at specific projects and their merits. There's a lot of discussion. It's not that there isn't a need for transportation issues, but the question is this the best and most effective way to provide that funding? I would urge you to look at, there's a very clear record that this program has not worked well at all. There's a lot of discussion about, from the public and amongst elected officials, about the problems of waste, fraud, and abuse. This program is the poster child for waste, fraud, and abuse. What happened is the way the legislature used to fund these programs, is they'd come in with proposals like other proposals. They'd have to give their merits the proposal and get that actual project funded. And so you as elected officials could judge those against needs for other projects, but also the public could judge the needs for those projects and be able to testify. This was put into what could be called a slush fund, and I think very correctly, where it's out of the public eye, and the projects that are getting funding are not being reviewed. And as a matter of fact, there are rules that were required to be established to operate this program. Those rules are not being followed. For example, there's a requirement that they do an annual notice to the various port authorities and other interested parties that there'll be funding available, what the funding is available, what the rules are, what they have to fill out, and then it has to be done on a comparative basis. That is not being done. They are not sending out notice. There's a requirement, there's a cost-benefit analysis that has to be done on the projects. That is not being done. These are being done by behind the scenes, quietly, no-bid proposals that are being sent in, and there's no competition, no review, or very little review that's being done. I've raised this with the commissioner, and to the commissioner's credit, they have looked into it, and I'm not trying to speak for the commissioner, but I'm just saying that you can check with the concerned rate. I'll give you an example. There's a $3.5 million facility that was funded all with public money, much of that state bonding money. There was no public notice of this proposal going through. There was no review as far as there was no cost-benefit analysis or anything. They built the facility, and then they walked away from the facility. The facility is sitting there vacant and empty. Even if they had used the facility, which they said they needed to build, they planned to lease it for just over $19,000 for a $3.5 million publicly paid for city, publicly paid for facility for a private vendor. There's also requirements about what they can and should use this for. And part of this impacts, the, if anybody looks at it, what your bonding can be used for. The rules don't allow us to be used for private facilities and stuff. They are using this funding to put in roads that are not on the property of the leaseholder, which is prohibited, or by the grantee, which is prohibited. They're putting on roofs on buildings for large multinational corporations that are leasing them on long-term leases. These are not public facilities per se. There are other things that are going on with this program. If you take a look, and it was talk about the increase in traffic, I'm not speaking on the Port of Duluth, that's quite a different issue, but if you take a look at the record in the Mississippi River, river traffic fluctuates, but river traffic is this continuum downward because it can't compete with the upgrade with the Staggers Rail Act, which has changed the upgrades of the railroads and the independence for them to reinvest. They can't compete, and the business is deteriorating. You can look at the records. The Corps of Engineers has the records. Also, if you take a look at the, it was mentioned that about $10 million gets put into this program at years. Well, if you take a look at the record, the highest that the state has ever put money, bonding money is $3 million, and some years none, and varied between there. If you take a look at the state transportation improvement program funding, which you've been provided, I believe, it lays out for 2013, 14, 15, and 16, and for port development, it's a total of $4 million that they have listed, that the MnDOT has listed for 4 years. So why do we have a $10 million proposal in a non-bonding year? Add to that, what is also happening with some of this money is being diverted to pay for other things. Well, and I'll use St. Paul as an example of the St. Paul Port Authority. One example is the St. Paul Port Authority, when they asked for funding for this $3.5 million facility, to get the operator to relocate, they offered him a $2 million reduction, roughly, not quite, almost $2 million reduction in their lease payments to get them to move over, and then came to the state to bonding money to make up for those lost revenues in the they also the Port Authority got into trouble with a badly drafted bonding agreement where they were taken to court on for funding projects that were not port funds, were not port projects, and they are now as part of the settlement, a court settlement, using port revenues to fund the settlement of this lawsuit. So, in effect, the state is being asked to use bonding money to supplant revenues they lost in a court settlement of a non-port-related development.
Mr. Diamond, could you just wrap up
your testimony? I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And appreciate the time. My main point is this is a non-bonding year. This is not an emergency need. And if there are emergency needs, I would strongly encourage you to actually look at projects themselves so you and the public has an opportunity to look and evaluate those processes, because historically, there has been some real misuse of this program and how it's being funded. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Diamond. Are there any questions of the testifier? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Diamond, we haven't met. Could you just remind the committee of your interest in the ports and how you come by this information? And then, Mr. Chair, just have an observation for the committee.
Of course. Mr. Diamond?
Sure. Representative Beard, how I come about this, I've been involved, I lived in St. Paul all my life, been involved in the community, served on the city council in St. Paul. Okay. And well, I believe very strongly in our public, providing public infrastructure and public commons. I think that it's really important that we as citizens ensure that those dollars go to where they should be and are used efficiently and correctly. Not only because it's the right thing to do as far as looking out for the interests of the taxpayers, but you know as well as anybody that the need of worthwhile projects greatly exceeds the available revenues that are there. So I think it's very important that we make sure that these funds are used properly and according to what the legislature and the statutes and the rules call for.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. And I think you'd find agreement around this table bipartisanly. We're trying to be transparent and invest the taxpayers' dollars as wisely as we can. Mr. Chair, perhaps it would be helpful, and again, I don't know this gentleman. He appears to have some knowledge about how port authorities work. At some point when we're looking for something to do, perhaps after deadlines, we could actually delve in a little bit to how the port authorities differ between Red Wing and Winona and Duluth and so on and so forth, and how they actually apply for these ports. I know that this money actually goes through MnDOT, and I'm trying, I don't see the MnDOT port guy in the audience. I see his stand. Oh, here we are. Okay. Now, Dick is sitting right behind me, I guess. But anyhow, at some point in the future, we could do that. And just a comment on bonding requests. Yes, this is not necessarily a bonding year, but in my 10 years of experience here, it's not unusual for people to bring bonding requests at any time to lay over for consideration at some point in the future, whether that's this year, next year, or whatever. And it seems to me that my friend Representative Pulowski brings a $10 million request every other year, and we usually whack it back to nothing or three. Those seem to be the magic numbers for whatever reason. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to consider this request and know that the ports are important, but at a time in the future, perhaps we could hear a little more about how this process actually works and what transparency does exist.
Thank you, Representative Beard. That's a good suggestion. Representative Pulowski, did you have any final thoughts to share with the committee?
No, just to agree with Representative Beard. These bills are usually put in the first year, even though the bonding year is typically the second. The bill will then be before your committee or capital investment. And you're right, it usually is around $10 million or so, and you can see the funding pattern's been about three. It's been line item vetoed once. So it's what it is. I have not had any complaint over the years, and we've alternated carrying this bipartisanly about the bill. And there is a 20% match, I believe, locally for it. These tend to be local projects. They work closely with the city councils and other local entities. So this is news to me. It will be interesting to see where this goes.
Well, thank you. Are there any other questions of members? Yes, Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to see if there's a, you know, with the concern that this is, you know, a lot of dollars sitting out there in a fund that people just send in requests and have a match to. You know, there's a couple examples of what they were, you know, of what this does, but I'd like to see a list of possible projects and maybe possible projects and the relationship to how that bond application or what the characteristics are and how you select that. That's all interesting things for me to actually get my arms around to see how that selection is and what type of projects this thing actually funds and has funded.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, that certainly can be produced. I'm more familiar with Winona, and we can get you pictures, but they're not going to be very exciting pictures. A lot of it is improvements in a dock, extending a dock, and the access to the dock. But on the other side of it, if we didn't do this, we would not have barge traffic in Winona, and that was critical to maintaining goods coming and going throughout southeastern Minnesota.
Representative Howe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm more looking for a spreadsheet. I'm you know, I'm not even a photogenic guy, so spreadsheets work good. Thanks.
Well, I'm Mr. Chair and Representative Howe. I agree. I love spreadsheets, too. But this is about as boring a subject as you can get, considering where this is put and how it's done. However, if it isn't done properly, traffic does not get off the river or onto the river. That's the downside.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Howell. But I know that there's some port authorities that almost works like EDAs in some areas. And so some funds, even though they don't always just dredge the port and provide the access, that there's also monies that go towards building and developing businesses along the close to the ports and that type of thing. So I know that yeah, we're talking about dredges and creating the wharfs, that type of thing, but I think that there's also dollars that go in that other area, more like an EDA, so I'd like to see what kind of those projects are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, I'm sure that can be provided.
Okay. So, members, we should move on. Just again to remind members who weren't here when we first had the bill before the committee, this bill, as is the case with the other bonding bills, will stay in this committee. This is an informational hearing. At the appropriate time, we will have a spreadsheet, and we will rank the different bonding proposals and make a recommendation to Representative Houseman. So with that, members, we will lay over this bill and continue the conversation. Thank you, Representative Pulaski. I don't see Representative Mahoney, so we will hear Representative Moline's bill at this juncture. Welcome, Representative Moline, and as was the case with Representative Pulaski's bill, we'll hear your bill and lay it over, and it'll be part of the process that we have with the Capital Investment Committee. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe I have an amendment as well.
Okay, let me, that's the A2 amendment, correct?
Correct.
So I'll move the A2 amendment before the committee. Representative Moline, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's just from my understanding to not unnecessarily limit where the project could be getting their matching dollars from.
Okay. Are there any questions about the A2 amendment? So we'll incorporate that into House File 467. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So the bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing House File 467 today. I have Chandra Molas with me, who's the Executive Director of the Range Regional Airport, and he'll really be going through the specifics of the project and how important it is to our region. But just to quickly sum it up, it's a $5 million bonding request for the Range Regional Airport. Some much-needed improvements at our airport. This request has been around for a while. It was line item vetoed back in 2010. I had a hearing last year, and I'm bringing it around again in hopes that it will be considered in this year's bonding bill. I don't think I could overstate how important the Range Regional Airport is to our industry and economic development in northeastern Minnesota. We have a lot of businesses that do a lot of international business, a lot of exporting, and they use the airport quite frequently, as does our healthcare industry. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Germolis to explain the specifics of the project and why it's needed at the Range Regional Airport.
Thank you, Representative Moline, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Germolis. If you could just state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. I want to thank Representative Moline for supporting this bill. My name is Sean Dramolis. I'm the Executive Director for the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport Authority. We operate the Range Regional Airport, which is located centrally on Minnesota's Iron Range region. The airport serves the needs of the region through commercial airline service, charter, and general aviation services. commercial service is provided daily by Delta Connection, whose trans formed from the 30-passenger turboprop planes to the 50-passenger regional jets. We also support charter flights with Sun Country Airlines to Laughlin, Nevada, about every 4 to 6 weeks. And those aircraft, using the Boeing 737, accommodate up to 162 passengers. The increased frequency in larger aircraft have increased the boardings about 30% these last 3 years compared to the 4 years previous to that, which brings us to our problem. It's a good problem to have. We've simply outgrown our facilities at the Range Regional Airport. The current airline terminal building was constructed in 1978 prior to the service by the larger aircraft. It is also prior to the required operational space now needed by the Department of Homeland Security, Transportation Security Administration for passenger and baggage screening. Among the various constraints and shortcomings of the existing terminal facility are outlined in your handout on pages 3 and 4. We have an undersized passenger boarding lounge without restrooms. It was expanded in 2010 from 19 seats to 35 seats. It certainly doesn't meet the seats needed for the 50-passenger regional jet and 162-737 jet that Sun Country utilizes. The lack of restrooms creates a major inconvenience for our passengers. To use the facilities, they have to exit the screening hold room and then re-enter the screening process, which can create some delays at the airport. There's inadequate TSA passenger screening checkpoint. Currently doesn't meet the TSA standards for design. Bisects the passenger lounge, and it creates some inefficiencies for processing our passengers and creates some overcrowding in that small area. We have an undersized baggage claim area. It actually is bisected again by the TSA screening equipment and people that are needed for the outbound luggage. It bisects the return luggage and also the ticket passenger waiting area. Approximately about 6 people can stand in line for the Delta counters. And again, when you're returning from your flights, about 6 to 8 people can comfortably fit into the return area to pick up their luggage. And one of the pictures, it shows the customer standing outside under the awning of our front of our terminal. Some are wearing shorts, and that's obviously taken in the summertime. In mid-January, Sun Country flight returned with 123 passengers from the desert of Laughlin. And we handed them 116 suitcases out on the curb with blowing wind and snow. Simply not the first-class experience they deserve. It's not what the Range Regional Airport wants to provide. Also with the facility, the current HVAC systems, lighting, exterior wall insulations, is all inefficient in reaching the useful life of those systems. We are already committed FAA, MnDOT Office of Aeronautics, and IRRRB funds and the Airport Authority funds for the design of this project. We're moving forward with that. We should have the design finished this spring with bids taken this summer. FAA funding is the traditional main source of financing a project like this. However, it would take approximately 4 years for the airport to acquire enough FAA entitlement funds to complete construction through that funding source. I ask that you look at the back 2 pages of the handout. Second to the last page shows the projects that we need to complete here in the next 3 years, with the final page illustrating our typical financing that we would get through the FAA, State Aeronautics, through MnDOT, and our local match. You can see the total on that last page is actually $11.5 million in needs of the airport. 5.5 of that is the construction of the terminal, with the remaining being a terminal apron parking ramp that's failing and needs to be replaced and expanded, and then a taxiway that needs to be built around that current ramp. The airport supports general aviation services. There's large business jets that fly into the airport on a weekly basis. When those planes are parked there, there's not enough space to safely taxi the regional jet of Delta around the backside of those aircraft at times. And when the 737 from Sun Country Airlines or SR Steel arrives, it's impossible to taxi that aircraft past that 737. The entitlement funding that we receive from the FAA is given to us because we are considered a primary FAA airport boarding more than 10,000 passengers a year. We're eligible for $1 million that we can use towards these type of projects. the $1 million per year, obviously it's going to take about 4 years to fund the terminal project. We are able to compete for discretionary dollars, so those turn back entitlements from other airports not used. Unfortunately, it's a very competitive process, and we compete with other airports in the nation, usually with safety-related airfield projects. Expanding a regional terminal in northern Minnesota is not high on their priority list, and so the chances of getting discretionary are pretty low, which would extend this project further. The taxiway that's located on the south side of that apron is not in existence right now. Because of the aircraft space and taxi requirements and the issues of the aircraft not having enough space to properly taxi, this does not currently meet the FAA design standards, and so they're requiring us to use our entitlements this year to construct that taxiway. So that's where our funds will be used this year. And we will try for discretionary dollars, but again, I think it's very difficult to expect that to be obtained for the airport terminal. We will continue to move forward, though, and maximize our FAA dollar programs as much as possible. MnDOT's Aeronautics Fund as well. We do have verbal support from the IRRRB on these projects. We will be putting applications in with them as well for construction. And then, of course, there are local dollars that the airport will commit. We believe that it's a very strong project with regional impacts. It supports economic development in our area. It currently sustains about approximately 30 jobs at that terminal facility. It would create approximately about 80 jobs for the design and construction. And most importantly, once constructed, this facility sustains itself financially between the airline leases, TSA, and car rental and others. It more than pays for the operation of that facility. So with that, I respectfully request your consideration on this bonding project.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gomolis. Are there questions of the author or the testifier? Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a clarification on the back page. I think I understand the first cost, and I appreciate you bringing this, give us some sort of idea. The cost level is the $11.5 million that you need for the expansion to do the project the way you want. But then you talked about FAA and only having a very small portion of that. So are the rest of these more of just kind of speculation on these columns, or are they valid of any sort at all?
Mr. Gomolis.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson. The total projects, there's three projects listed on that second to the last page that illustrates that. And then these are the dollars that are estimated to construct those three projects. We are today asking for the first project, the terminal expansion and remodeling project, which is $5.5 million. The bond's asking for $5 million, which would leave another $500,000 that we expect to then pay for through the state MnDOT Aeronautics Fund, IRRRB funds, and local funds to make up that cost. The remaining dollars, we will, again, the taxiway alpha project, our money that's already being committed through our FAA dollars that we have this year. So that second project, taxiway alpha, is already, funds are encumbered for that, and we are moving forward with that project, which then leaves the terminal ramp expansion and reconstruction project. And that one may be delayed a couple more years. We'll try to do some preventative maintenance on that apron. But again, we will seek FAA and discretionary dollars through the FAA system for that third project. So again, today, just the first project, terminal expansion remodeling, is the project that we're seeking the bonding dollars for.
Representative Petersburg, a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still, you're asking, according to this, I guess I'm not sure how the bonding of $5 million fits into this if you're expecting to get FFA $3.7 million. And so that's the question I'm at.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you want the bonding and that FFA will eventually provide the funds back, or how you intended that to work. I'm just clear.
Sure.
Unclear.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, if we secure the $5 million through bonding, the other $500,000 would be made up with state and local funds, and we would not receive any FAA dollars to use towards this bonding project. We would then use the bonding, or the FAA dollars that we would receive for the other two projects listed on that page.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or discussion of House File 467, Gesundheit. Okay. So with that, members, again, this is an informational hearing only. We'll keep the bill in the committee and lay it over, and then we'll have a discussion with Representative Hausman and her committee about our transportation committee priorities. So thank you very much, Representative Moline.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your consideration, and we would certainly appreciate being ranked high up there on your recommendations to Representative Hausman. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have, is Representative Yaruso here? Okay, we'll take her bill. We'll still wait for Representative Mahoney and take his bill last. I understand he's has a bill in another committee. So.
And Mr. Chair, would you like me to move the minutes?
Yes, that would be a good
opportunity.
February
28th, I'd like to move the minutes.
Vice Chair Bernardi moves the minutes of February 28th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And I believe that, Representative Bernardi, you were interested in moving House File 274. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 274 and recommend it be laid over for possible inclusion in the
And Mr. Chair, I think we need to note that this this first-termer has learned her lesson well, and she understands that the first time she appears before a committee, she has appropriately brought a treat for the committee.
Mr. Chairman,
wow.
I'm almost persuaded to vote aye.
Well, let's stop while we're ahead, Mr. Chair.
Well, and thank you very much, Representative Yaruso, and we appreciate very much. This is a tradition, but we have not had a lot of, as Representative Hausman pointed out, a lot of freshmen this year that have partaken, so we appreciate
it.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could start with, you've got a copy of a map in the handouts you're given for this. This bill is asking for an appropriation to fund development of roads in and around what's known as the TCAP project in Arden Hills. Some of you are probably pretty familiar with what the TCAP area. TCAP stands for the Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant. It is part of a large 2-mile by 2-mile property that was formerly used in part for production of munitions. The bulk of the property is still used by the Army for training base, but there is a piece of the property that is going to be bought by Ramsey County and redeveloped in cooperation with the city of Arden Hills. They have a joint powers agreement for that. But in order to do that, there are some needed road improvements, and that's what this bill focuses on. Your map shows the square in the middle, that's kind of brown, shows the TCAP property itself, the 2-mile by 2-mile area. The area in blue is the part that would be redeveloped by Ramsey County and Arden Hills. This is an area of about 427 acres. There is, in addition, a part of the property that is about 108 acres that's going to be developed as parkland. Both of those are currently awaiting some federal approval to make that happen. There are four pieces to this project of road work that needs to be done. If you look, there's two circles on the map. If you look at the one on the lower of the two circles, the one farther south, that is the area where Highway 96 crosses Interstate 35W. That's one of the biggest pieces of the project. The circle to the north is where County Road H crosses I-35W and Highway 10 and Rice Creek. The dotted line that goes from that northern circle down kind of to the southeast is a road that would be developed in the future as part of the redevelopment of the property. And the little circle along Highway 96 that is at the end of that dotted line is an intersection that needs to be reconfigured along Highway 96. And I'll address each of those pieces in turn. The opposite side of that map, if you're unfamiliar with the area, shows you where it is in the Twin Cities. This is in Arden Hills, as I mentioned, which is north of, this particular area is north of Highway 694, just immediately north of Highway 96 and immediately to the east of I-35W. You also have a handout that shows the timing and the estimated dollar amounts for the project, and that's broken into four pieces, as I mentioned. The total amount of money that we're asking to be appropriated eventually for this project is just over $35 million. That is kind of staged in these different parts. It would be spread over a four-year period. The engineering planning, the preliminary planning for the entire project would be done at the beginning, but the actual engineering, construction engineering and the construction of the roadways would be staged out over the four-year period. I'm going to take those kind of in reverse order, just so we can get some of the smaller pieces out of the way, or the later pieces out of the way, and then concentrate on the early big pieces.
Representative Urusso, just before you move on with that testimony, I did want to give a warm Transportation Finance Committee welcome to 9th and 10th grade students at the Great River School who are joining us today. It's great to have you all. This is an important bill we're discussing right now relating to redevelopment of a large plot of land just north of your school in Arden Hills. And it's, you know, polluted land. It used to be a munitions factory, and we're seeing how we can use that land and make it available to, you know, commercial ventures, housing, what have you. And Representative Urusso is presenting a bill about the transportation infrastructure around this site. So welcome. Continue, Representative Urusso.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for mentioning one of the key aspects of this project. Why is this project important? Because it was previously used to produce munitions, this has been a Superfund site. We have polluted ground. We've polluted groundwater in this site. It's been the ongoing focus of cleanup efforts, and that has prevented its redevelopment. Ramsey County has taken this on now because in conjunction with the attempt to get the Viking Stadium before they entered into a contract that will enable them to get this cleanup done. And that's part of the timing of the project. Arden Hills has been for years and years and years and years wanting to get this piece of property redeveloped. It's a very large chunk of relative to the size of Arden Hills. And it offers an opportunity to add to Arden Hills' tax base by including some residential redevelopment and to add jobs for the area by including some commercial or industrial development. The spine road, the dotted line on your map, would be the major road that will go through this development when that happens. County Road H piece in the big circle that's to the north would connect the development to Moundsview. That would be a crucial point of access for the city, people that live in the city of Moundsview, to be able to access the jobs that would be developed in this area, and for the people that would live in this area to be able to access the businesses that are in Moundsview. The tiny circle on Highway 96 is necessary for access to the property when it's redeveloped and access during the construction that would happen during the redevelopment. But it also would improve safety along Highway 96 in the immediate future. That intersection is near an extremely large church, North Heights Lutheran Church, and currently the traffic out of that church goes through an uncontrolled intersection, and they have to hire police officers to help them direct traffic in order to be able to have people enter and exit safely there on a Sunday or when they have other events.
And Representative, so we have a question from Representative Benson.
I can wait. Question when you're done.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Members, we'll have Representative Urusso finish her presentation, then if you have questions at the end of her presentation.
So that intersection would be reconfigured, and there would be a controlled intersection in the future as part of this development project. And that brings us then to the large circle on your map that's in the southern circle. That is where Highway 96 crosses over I-35W. This bridge has been on MnDOT's radar for about 15 years. It needs to be reconstructed, but MnDOT needs to have the money to do it. Currently, the bridge is a three-lane bridge. It has two lanes in one direction and one lane in the other. It is congested. It's an important bridge. Highway 96 is what's been identified as a regional route. It connects the cities of Shoreview and Arden Hills with points north and south. As New Brighton does redevelopment, it will help people get to and from those areas also. It currently has zero safe pedestrian, bicycle, or wheelchair access. There's no shoulder. There's the three lanes and then 18 inches and the rail. So yesterday, there wouldn't have even been those 18 inches because of the snow. I would not ride a bicycle over this bridge. And consequently, I have no bicycle access from where I live in Shoreview to Long Lake Regional Park. Highway 96 has been, the whole corridor has been designated as a regional bicycle trail. If we get that developed, we would have continuous bicycle access from near White Bear Lake, the other end of that also needs some work, all the way to Long Lake Regional Park. If you get it completed on both ends of Highway 96 there, we would have continuous bicycle access from St. Croix to the Mississippi, and that opens it up to the entire state. It also, if we provide access across that bridge, pedestrians would be able to access that safely, and wheelchairs would be able to access it. Excuse me. Checking my notes, make sure I didn't miss anything here. Oh, currently the bridge needs to be resurfaced. It needs to be redecked. As I mentioned, MnDOT has had this on their list of projects. They would like to just take the bridge down and redo the bridge. But if they don't get the money to do that soon, they're going to be forced to redeck the bridge. And personally, I would consider that kind of a waste of money because the whole thing will need to be redone in the future. So it seems a shame to go ahead and redeck it now when this larger project actually needs to be done. All right, with that, I will turn it, ask the chair.
Well.
Excuse me. We have Brenda Holden here representing the city of Arden Hills.
Well, thank you, Representative Reeser. Before we get to your testifiers, we do have three questions from committee members, and I'll start with Representative Benson. We also have Representative Howe and Beard. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll preface this with my question with we have a lot of work we need to do in transportation finance. There's a lot of infrastructure improvements and needs and so on. And I don't mean this in a mean-spirited way at all, but this kind of sounds like a project, if we build it, they will come. And I'd have a much higher comfort level if I knew that there was an identified, you know, we know 10 businesses that are ready to sign on the dotted line. That's my question. Do we have some interest, serious interest, signing on the dotted line interest for this redevelopment?
Representative Urso.
Thank you. I would like to turn this over to Rafael Ortega. But first, answer one part of it. The as far as the 96 over 35W piece is concerned, we do have a current need for that. That the need to have that bridge redone does not depend on the development. The development depends on redoing the bridge, but the need for the bridge does not depend on the development.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, but just to understand too, we have a process to allow MnDOT to prioritize the projects that need to get done. So with that in mind, to my other question.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Yeah, let's do this, members, because I think this is, I'm already seeing more questions stacking up here. So what I think we should do is have the testifiers finish their testimony, and then we can have a robust discussion with Representative Urizo and the three panelists, and we can get those questions answered. So but thank you for that, Representative Benson. Commissioner Ortega, would you like to go first?
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Rafael Ortega, Ramsey County Commissioner and Chair of the Board. In the interest of time, I'll be very brief and have Brenda say a few words, and then we could answer the questions. Ramsey County has executed a purchase agreement with the U.S. General Services Administration for 28 $0.5 million for the 427 acres. Along with that, we get 103 acres that will be part of parkland as part of the deal. We then have entered into a contract with Bolander to execute the cleanup. I just want to say that the cleanup will be to residential standards. There will be a certificate of completion at the end of this in 2 years. We're waiting for, right now, it's moving quite quickly through the federal government. I just came back a couple of weeks ago. We expect to be on the ground employing people to clean up by mid-April. And probably ahead of schedule, the way things are going. We've also entered into a joint powers agreement with the city of Arden Hills to establish a joint development agency. We've had our first meeting last week, a five-member board, two county commissioners, two city council, and a citizen who will be the chair of the agency. We are proceeding, and Brenda could speak more to this, on marketing studies, master plan. We could go down the checklist. I assure you we've pretty much checked all the boxes. At this point, I'll just want to let you know that for Ramsey County, we're a fully developed county. Everything in Ramsey County that's good for development is a brownfield, period. So as we move forward in Ramsey County, we need to address these large tracts of property that have been have not been within the reach of many of the cities because it's an expensive proposition. So we've joined arms together to address this, and hopefully it'll be a model because, as I stated, it's throughout the county. And so we need to partner with not just Arden Hills, but with other cities in the county to make our brownfields productive and expand our commercial and residential tax base.
Okay. Thank you very much, Commissioner Ortega. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Brenda Holden. I'm a city council in Arden Hills, and I've been one since 2002. I wish I would have brought cookies now, but too late. Arden Hills is very excited to be working towards the remediation and development of this TCAP area. What we would like to see also is removal of the Superfund label from it. We would be able to do that if the land was remediated, which we do have the largest Superfund site in the state of Minnesota on that TCAP property. The land was deemed to be surplus by the federal government in 2002, and right away the city started partnering. We had partnership developments. We did RFPs, and when the economy crashed, we lost our partners. We then tried to partner with the Vikings to get the land remediated and developed, and that fell through also. And so we've dealt with many more other partners trying to develop the land, which has not been successful. The county has stepped up to the plate, and we're very excited about them because one of the reasons that they are up at the plate with the Bolanders is they're going to push for a certificate of completion, which means all the land will be remediated to residential standards, which means 50 years from now, I don't have to worry about a commercial property coming down, someone wanting to build a residential area there, and having to start with the cleanup again through MPCA. GSA, another complication with this property is the way GSA is selling the property. They need to sell the property as one piece. They won't parcel it out. They won't divide it. It has to go as one piece, which has been an issue for the last 10 years. Right now, developers cannot get banks to back them up. They can't get the insurance. So for a private developer to come in to help develop this whole parcel is just unwilling and unable to happen at this point in time. What the city is visioning now, we're in the process. We have our RFP out there for the master plan. We had 18 people from 13 different firms come and meet at our RFP question and answer session. We're looking at a mixed-use development, residential, commercial, and light industrial. We're right on the freeway. We think that's a good mix next to the land where the TCAPS property is, and all the open space and trees would be residential. More towards the highway where it's very visible would be the commercial and industrial. One of the things that really limits this piece of property is the outside infrastructure. Based on the amount of cars that can get on the property now, it's very limited. So that really complicates how we can develop the property. Do we develop one piece of land and then we don't develop the rest? So the infrastructure is very important from this point on to develop so that we can fully develop this property and expand the tax base in Arden Hills and residential and create lots of jobs and lots of areas that are within walking distance. I live in Arden Hills, and for you that don't know, I am 2 miles north, exactly, of Rosedale. We're not talking way out in the boonies. I'm 2 miles north of Rosedale. So this is very close to the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, and a lot of these residents, I know right now 60% of the Arden Hills residents, they commute to St. Paul or Minneapolis. These hot roads are highly utilized and will continue to be so. That's all I have, so thank you very much for listening.
Okay, thank you very much, Councilmember Holden. We have one more testifier, it looks like. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
James Tolis. I am the Public Works Director for Ramsey County. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our elected officials have really given a very good overview. I'm just going to emphasize a couple of specific points. First, with respect to the 96-35 interchange, that project's been talked about at length for about 15 years now. Ramsey County took Trunk Highway 96 back from the state system onto the county state aid system in 1994. From that time forward, we have looked at improvements all along Highway 96 and have completed them up to just east of U.S. Highway 10. The great separation of U.S. Highway 10 and 96 is going to begin in about 1 month and will be completed this year. The last remaining piece is that segment across 35W over to Old 8. With respect to how important that is, we did have some comment about there's absolutely no pedestrian features on it. It has one lane eastbound, two lanes westbound. It does not have sufficient capacity now, and the terminals are not signalized, and under current traffic loads, it fails. The city of New Brighton, just prior to the downturn in the economy, had begun a very significant development called the Northwest Quadrant. And as they prepared and were ready to move forward, the economic downturn really did stifle that development. That is sitting there ripe for a full build-out. We did a capacity analysis of that interchange when we did the design for the 9610 grade separation. It has no elasticity to absorb additional traffic impacts or pressures on that interchange. So we are headed for a failure of that interchange with or without a TCAP development. So there's a pressing need for that particular improvement. With respect to what MnDOT has looked at for that structure, it was redecked back in 1997 or 8 with hopes of having it in the plan for a reconstruction before the next time around. The deck is deteriorated to the point where the entire deck has to be removed at this point, and it's like a $1.1 million investment. I think even MnDOT would prefer to replace this interchange rather than redeck it again. It's a poor investment and does not do anything for traffic or safety on that structure. With respect to other features, we've been talking about the H interchange at 35 probably for a decade, always citing it as a major entry point to the TCAP property if and when it moves forward. MnDOT has identified a significant replacement of that structure. It's structurally and geometrically deficient right now as we speak. It's in their program, I believe it's for 2015, for a full replacement of the structure. This is the opportune time to create a full access interchange. Right now, you cannot go northbound on 35 and exit at H. And so with a replacement of that structure, it's the opportune time to add the off-ramp northbound and the necessary pedestrian and bicycle features that are warranted in any new structure these days. Structures are about a 75-year investment. It would be very unfortunate to see that project move forward without those other improvements made with it. With respect to the things along 96, we have actually roughed in the footprint for a future connection off of 96 opposite North Heights Church campus. And so these projects have been in the mill for a very long time. It's finding the necessary funding to move them forward.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Toss. I believe there's another testifier that called in who is on the list. Is Mr. Benke here? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, he's coming down. I also have, I don't have the printed copy of this yet, but I have an email. My son happens to be the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commissioner for District E, which includes Northwestern
Ramsey. We have a hard copy of that.
Oh, you did get
yes.
it. Okay,
yes.
Thank you. I didn't.
I was wondering if there was a relation.
Yes, and just to summarize what he says, this corridor is actually an important connection point for Northwestern Ramsey County between a number of regional park resources. Also, the bicycle transportation is important for anyone who wants to try to do any bicycle commuting, because currently there is no safe bicycle access across I-35W between County Road E2 and County Road I. And in Ramsey County, the county roads are a mile apart, so you can kind of do the math. E2 is a halfway between E and F. So anyone that wants to commute to downtown Minneapolis from Shoreview or Arden Hills has no good way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Mr. Benke, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robert. I call myself Bob Benke, B-N-K-E. I am currently serving as the project manager for the North Metro I-35W Corridor Coalition, as well as being a 42-year resident of the city of New Brighton. So I'm very familiar with the corridor and the problems that you've been hearing about today and have been going on for a long time. This Corridor Coalition sponsored, and MnDOT is at this point in time concluding a managed lane study on 35W that looked at future traffic needs from downtown Minneapolis to Forest Lake. That study is recommending the installation of managed lanes and opt-in MnPass tolling, and they are recommending that the initial segment from County Road or from Highway 10 on the north to Highway 36 in Roseville be the first segment for implementation. And within that, improvement from County Road E2 to the 96 interchange appears to be a logical first step to address traffic congestion. So we are in concert and support the adoption of this bill and the funding that would improve those interchanges. Those changes and the replacements are consistent with the long-term plans that we've worked on since we created the coalition in 1996. So we know about the corridor, we know about these bridges and these projects. We've worked with Arden Hills for many years on all of the developments in the corridor, and we'll leave it with that. We encourage your adoption and support for this bill.
Okay, thank you, members. So we'll take up where we left off. Reverend Benson was asking about possible tenants and have specific, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, specific companies or developers been recruited, and have they signed contracts, et cetera, or memorandums of understanding to locate in this area? So I believe that's where we left off, and I think was Commissioner Ortega was going to answer that one.
Well,
or no, maybe whoever.
Both of us answered. Yeah. But let me just say that the moment the board passed this, the very day that we voted to purchase this property and clean it up, I could tell you that I had two phone calls, and within that week, two meetings with two corporate entities in the metro area interested about this site. And just preliminary, I know what's coming to my office from different developers and different folks have come in. We have decided at Ramsey County to act with our partners. We do not want to start cutting up this parcel of land before we even clean it up. The city, the Joint Powers Board is going to do a master development plan, a marketing plan. I can tell you the county has had meetings with Greater MSP. Had one just yesterday again. This is going to be on their radar. You don't have this large of a tract of land that's equidistant from both St. Paul and Minneapolis, roughly, 10 miles? The transportation is the issue that we're trying to resolve. So the issue is not to come up with a list of a small development. We're talking about 427 acres. You know, our vision is to shoot for a large corporate campus to sort of help kick things off, and that's the way we're heading. In the meantime, we do have inquiries, and we have staff people. We have put the Joint Powers Board, we're staffing it with county and city staff, and you know, that's a function where they'll move forward and as we clean up the property.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to say that we get at the city approximately 3 to 4 calls a week about the TCAP property. We have approximately 2 to 3 people a month that actually come and do the tour on the TCAP property to see the layout of the land. Pulte recently developed 39 houses in Arden Hills, and at this point we've sold 36 of them in this down economy, and the houses are $450,000 to $500,000 homes. So Arden Hills is a desirable place to go. Target was always going to be on the TCAP property. It's still very interested in building on the TCAP property. They have again contacted the city to let them know that they are still interested in that. That will have to go through the developers. But has anyone signed on the dotted line? No, but we do have a lot of interest, and we know that our area is very vibrant to these communities and business areas.
Thank you. We have several questions, so I'd like to move on. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I've spent a lot of time up on that property training with the National Guard. But you answered some of my questions, because I know it's clean now to an industrial standard. And so when you mentioned you were going to do some residential, I was kind of surprised you were going to take it down to a residential standard when you've got all those prospects for development for commercial. But that's doesn't really relate to the transportation piece. My concern is I understand we're going to build. We've got one new armory up there, or training and community center. The plans are to build another. How does that affect this interchange and that traffic pattern on 96 and 10 and 35, and especially with the size of vehicles we're talking?
Mr.
Chair,
It can only help. That intersection of 96 over 35W is already congested. It's already pretty much taking as much traffic as it can. So in doing that, if you're adding traffic to it, this can only help that. There's been, some of you may not realize, there's been a lot of construction in the area already. Mr. Tolis mentioned the reconstruction of Highway 10. This is one of the last pieces in that. And so it'll remain a bottleneck in the area until it's fixed. Also, I know the National Guard goes out on weekends, and so that intersection in the neighborhood of North Heights Church that would also eventually be the entrance to the TCAP would be of major concern because, as I said, currently they have to have somebody out there flagging traffic to get people across there safely.
Thank you. I have Representative Beard and Representative Earhart on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just a couple comments first, and then a question for probably Commissioner Ortega. It's good to see you again. We worked on this last couple of years when there was a proposal for a stadium there, and some of these same improvements needed to be made at that time. Members, you should know that in an occasion of happy coincidental timing with the stadium proposal, MnDOT had already proposed the what we called Snake Pit Junction at Snelling and 694 to be rebuilt, and I think that's underway. Highway 10 from there over to 35W was also in their plan of work and is underway. And the interior bridge on 96, I think 96 is going over 10 in there. Okay. Well, that was one. That's the only traffic light on that little piece of expressway, and that was already in the plan of work. So you know the plan of work does work and does move along from time to time. My concern was that the 96 over 35W get caught up, because I used to have customers in that area, and 20 years ago that bridge was a terrible bridge to try to work on. So I feel your pain on that one. Clarify, though, for the committee, because I think there's a little confusion here. We're looking at 2 square miles, about 1,280 acres here on your map. You're proposing to buy about 240 of them. What is in the rest of that? Is that still just open land? Is that still federal land then?
Representative Urso?
First of all, it's 427 acres that they're purchasing. The Army is going to retain possession of all of the rest of it except the piece that's going to be a park, which is another 100 and some acres. And as Representative Howe has mentioned, that is okay. Currently in use for training. There's a tiny piece, a couple of tiny pieces on the map that you can't see. The Arden Hills City Hall is on one piece, and there's a Ramsey County Sheriff's and County Works and so on office on another piece.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That helps clarify it. 400 and some acres you're buying, and the balance then stays with the military. Okay, that helps us know what it is we're looking for here. Well, the 10 account is a marvelous idea, I think, that had bipartisan support when we put it together. And I think we had a presentation, Mr. Chairman, on the TED account and its effect around the state. There's been several projects that have worked, that have yielded development, but they've always had something on deck ready to go with that. This, speaking only for myself, I guess I can understand that with the remediation to go on, that could kind of put a dampening effect on people willing to step even up on deck. So I kind of get that. But the TED account is something that's been effective. I think we've had kind of one maybe misstep so far with it, but the batting average has been pretty good. So know that we have some history with it, and it's been pretty good history. And I think you're asking for this to come from the TED account, if I'm not mistaken. So this member will be willing to listen to the story.
Thank you, Representative Beard. And just an announcement for those of you waiting for House File 316. We understand that Representative Mahoney is still in committee, and we'll probably hear that bill later in the month. So just an announcement. And so we'll spend our last 15 minutes just continuing on the discussion with this bill. Representative Earhart, I believe, has the next question. And Representative Holbrook, were you? Also, you're next, Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on Representative Beard's question, you mentioned parkland. Is that in the brown area or the blue area, for one thing?
Okay. As I've gone around to visit with the different folks, I've drawn in where the parkland is. The parkland, what you see in blue is the 427 acres. If you go a little north and then go around on your eastern side, there'll be a trail that will actually act as a buffer to the land that's going to be retained by the National Guard. So we'll have that wildlife park that's sort of north and east all the way down to the county road, to 96.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is this land all polluted too, or all the brown area on your map here, is that polluted too, or what's the story on that? Just as the U.S. government wants to retain it and...
Representative Urso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It varies around the property. The area that is being purchased was the site of some of the actual factories that were used for the production and the offices and so on. Some of the area that the Army is retaining was used as a test firing range. So there was a variety of uses on the property. So which pieces are polluted and which pieces are not really depends. It's kind of on a square-by-square basis as you go around the whole site. The part that's being proposed for the parkland is some of the part that was the least contaminated and still has, there's still some trees in parts of it. There's actually a certain amount of wildlife population that lives within this whole area because, you know, there's no traffic through it and whatnot, so there's actually a lot of deer back in there. And Rice Creek runs through part of that area up there where the park is going to be, and that's part of the Rice Creek watershed. So actually a fairly important little wildlife bit, as well as access to Rice Creek.
Well, one other question I had. Are there any sex offenders, third class, housed near this parkland? You don't know what that's about, but that was one of the questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Urusel, the Annapolis Park dedication fee.
Yes. I do not know. The area to immediately to the north of the parkland across County Road I is part of Shoreview, and so you can look it up.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I've kind of been in and out today if I missed this. When are these projects programmed to be done in the regular STIP?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Urusel.
When you say these projects, I'm not clear if you mean the highway project or the development project.
Mr. Chair, in the STIP, the State Transportation Improvement Plan, the transportation projects.
Do you have the hand? Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Urusel.
Oh. I'll let Mr. Tolles take this.
Mr. Tolles.
Chairman, Representative Holbert, the only thing that's in the STIP is the bridge redecking of Highway 96 over 35, and I believe that's a 2014. And then the replacement of the structure, the bridge itself at County Road H and 35, I believe is a 2015. That's the only thing MnDOT has put into the actual program at this point.
All right.
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, and if you know, maybe MnDOT might have to do a phone a friend here, but I certainly understand the situation. I represent a community that had three interchanges on 35 in the city of Lakeville, actually paid with local tax dollars to build an interchange on their own for the fourth now interchange. Has spent far in excess of what you're requesting here, local tax dollars to do improvements on the interstate system in order to allow for development in the community. In some instances have had participation from developers in tens of thousands of dollars to help accelerate projects. But in some cases, we were able to advance fund locally and then get paid back when that project was actually in the programming. Is MnDOT still doing that, offering that program?
Mr. Tolles, did you want to take your crack at that?
Representative Holbert, MnDOT traditionally did. We have not. I don't know right now if MnDOT is continuing that. I believe they do. We have participated on that basis in the past.
And Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I certainly understand the nuances of this and the pressures, but hopefully they're looking at all the tools. And I mean, I know when people bring in bills, some people, you know, take the top dollar amount, pay for everything, ask for everything, and hope maybe it settle at something else. But if this were to move forward, I think it's only fair to all the other projects waiting across the state to kind of look at where things are in the schedule and if there's a way to maybe use some of the advanced funding. Certainly, you have expressed many, many reasons why the local community will benefit from this investment as well, and there may be some willingness to provide some local help to make this happen. And from my experience, it takes a lot of creativity, and certainly you've learned that on the Armory site as well. But I would hope that maybe that request from the state may be massaged a little bit and look at some of the other programs and opportunities to accomplish some of the projects as well.
Thank you, Mr. Holberg, and I think it's an interesting point because this bill is very specific to the TED program, and so I think this $35 million is, my understanding, that's even more than in the TED account, although I think the governor would like more in the TED account, and we, you know, that's in his budget. So sort of something to think about moving forward. It is a good project, and but I think the dependency on TED might be a concern. So complete dependency on TED. Okay, we have Representative Bernardi.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Bernardi. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a good transition from Representative Holbert's question. One opportunity that we may, a tool in the toolbox, could be the local road improvement program, and falling into the area of local road with regional significance could possibly be considered by this committee. So if we could keep that as a possibility, I think that would be a good option. And I just, I drive by this every day coming to work, and it's really landlocked land. It was used in 19, you know, I don't know when exactly what the infrastructure was, but it's like 1960 infrastructure for an arsenal, and that's not being used anymore, and it's basically landlocked because it doesn't have the transportation infrastructure to get there. So hopefully we can get some tools to make it get into the 21st century.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I noted that there was a lot of bike infrastructure that they're having, and I would be pleased with that as well. Representative Houseman, I believe, has the last question.
Mr. Chair, my question is to MnDOT, if somebody is in the room who could answer this.
Yes.
But because we are referencing a very specific account, whether we could ask them for their advice about, is this the best way to direct it? Is this the tool, or are there other tools? Sort of to the question that Representative Bernardi, if there are, if we have anyone in the room who could just give their opinion about this source as opposed to others.
Welcome back to the committee, Representative. He sort of seems like a representative. Mr. Peterson, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott Peterson from MnDOT.
Okay.
And Representative Houseman, if I understood your question correctly, I guess my I would say that this project at this time is not a great candidate for the TED program. Some of the reasons why, this has been a competitive grant program. It's been very successful, very popular. And one of the reasons I think that it has enjoyed as much success as it has is because it's been very transparent. There are criteria associated with the grant application process, and so all the applications are scored against the criteria. A couple of the criteria are the amount of local or private participation in the financing of the project, and then the a number of new jobs that the investment will support or create. And usually this program is used for to fund projects that support economic development that's a little more ripe, for lack of a better term, in that there's an identified business associated on a nearby or a track that would be served by the transportation improvement. Another feature of this program that might be relevant is that currently and for the past two rounds of funding, we've had a cap of $7 million of money from the TED fund to a project. So, you know, that's $35 million is significantly more than that, obviously. And our another factor that perhaps the committee would like to consider is that most of the funding that has been in the TED program in the previous two rounds has been trunk highway funds. All the transportation improvements that have been paid for by TED have been to the trunk highway system, and the deed has provided some other funding for associated infrastructure like sewer and water improvements. So a fair number, if not most, of the costs of the improvements that are anticipated for the TCAP site would be local road improvements and not eligible for trunk highway funding. The governor has recommended that $10 million of general fund be appropriated to the TED program, and some of that money could be used for some of these road improvements if that were to become available. But to date, we have not had that type of resource in order to apply to these projects.
Representative Houseman? Okay. All right. Is there any further discussion or questions from the committee? Thank you. What's that? Yes. So, Representative Urso, great job on your very first transportation bill. Thank you. And we will just give you the last word in terms of any summary comments that you may have for us.
Thank you very much. I urge you to support this appropriation for us. One of the difficulties has kind of been highlighted just now. This whole property, the problem with the property is because of the federal use of the land. Now, it was a good use of the land. It supported the efforts for World War II. But Arden Hills has inherited this problem. And the reason you've heard of a number of efforts that haven't gone forward goes back to the federal use of the land. And so this whole project kind of falls between a rock and a hard place. You know, they're trying to acquire the land all in one piece from the federal government. We can't do anything about that. The land has been polluted in the past. We can't do anything about that. We've had the economic downturn. We can't do anything about that. But yet, Ramsey County and Arden Hills and the surrounding communities really want to move forward with developing this piece of land. The highways kind of fall in a funny thing, too, because we've got a former state highway that's been turned over to the county that goes over an interstate, coupled with another couple of county roads and whatnot. And so it's falling in the cracks in the existing programs. And so we really do need to find some creative way we can move forward with this so that we can actually do something with this, the great resource we've got there. Thank you, and I urge you to act on this thing.
And again, thank you for the thoroughness of your presentation and to the presenters. Commissioner, thank you. It's always good to see you.
Thank you.
So, members, with that, I will – this is not a bonding bill, so this is TED money, so we'll stay in our committee, and I will lay this over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Committee.
Thank you
very
Mr.
much. And with that, members, we are adjourned, and we'll meet tomorrow. We have several more bills, and then we'll also be in touch with everybody about rescheduling the Mahoney bill. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.